Let's begin. Does everybody have a source page? Today is an introduction to Kohelet. Everybody have? Okay. Let's start with some reading the opening psukim. We are not going to do much in terms of the text of Kohelet today. I really want to get an overview and introduction to the methodology that we will be taking to understand Kohelet. But I want to begin, as we will begin every year, with the psukim themselves. Divrei Kohelet ben David Melech b'Yerushalayim. The words of Kohelet ben David. Much has been said about the name Kohelet, and what it means and where it comes from. Most often quoted is the Medrash Chazal, that Kohelet comes from the expression lahakhil chachmot, to gather together words of wisdom. I'll offer another possibility of the meaning of the word in a moment. But the assumption of Ben David Melech b'Yerushalayim points us to Shlomo HaMelech. Right? We know of only one king, son of David, in Yerushalayim. His name was Shlomo. Why he's called Kohelet in the context of Sefer Kohelet is open to interpretation, but that's the assumption of who is the author of the Sefer. Havel Havalim Amar Kohelet, Havel Havalim Hakol Havel, probably the most famous verse in Tanakh. Translate Hevel. As I said, no such thing as a translation, that's not a commentary. Translate the word Hevel. Futile, mist, vain, vanity. All of these are translations that are interpretations. The word Hevel actually comes from the word Hevel Picha, which is the warm air that comes out of your mouth. From there to vanity, mist, futility, ultimately, something lacking substance. Hevel picha lacks substance. There's no substance to that which comes out of the mouth in terms of the air, and that is the assumption. Everything in the world is hevel. Ma yitzon la'adam b'chol amalo shi'amol tachat ha'shamesh. What? My Yitron. Yitron means, what's the word, yoter, or yeter? Advantage. What advantage is there for man in all of his toil that he should toil under the sun? Dor alech v'dor ba ve'al solam amadet. Generation comes, generation goes, and the earth endures le'olam. Forever. As I said, Shabbos afternoon. V'zerach Hashemesh uva Hashemesh ve'el mekomo sho'ef zoreach usham. The sun rises, the sun sets, and returns to the place from which it shall rise, in which it shall shine once more. Olech al darom v'sovev al tzafon. It goes to the south, it goes to the north. Sovev, sovev, olech haruach ve'al svivotav shav haruach. The wind goes in a circle, it simply goes around and around. All the rivers go to the ocean, and the ocean does not fill up. The place where the rivers went, that's where they end up returning to. The words are weary. Man cannot speak them. Eye cannot see them. The ear cannot hear them. Mashaya usheye, mashanasa usheyase. What was will be. What will be. What was will be again. What was done shall be done again. Ve'en kol chadash tachat ha'shamesh. Nothing new under the heavens, under the sun. Yesh davar shemara eze chadashu. If somebody says, look, this is new. Kvar haya le'olamim asheraya milefanenu. It was in years past. Nobody remembers the early years. And those that will come later will also not be remembered with those that will come after. I, Kohelet, was king of Israel in Jerusalem. That's all we're going to do today. That's an introduction, just a taste of a flavor. Because we're not going to explain these psukim today, we will Bezat Hashem address them next week. Today, what I really wanted to do is take a step back and understand what is it about Qohelet that intrigues us, frightens us, challenges us. Why is Qohelet the most enigmatic sefer and misunderstood sefer in Tanakh, or difficult to understand? So controversial is Qohelet, so problematic in its character, that Chazal actually discuss the possibility that Qohelet should have been excluded from the canon of the Bible. And that's really the point of departure for our discussion. If you look in the source pages that you have, source number one, the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Lamed, Amar Rav Yehuda Breider of Shmuel by Shilat Mishmed Rav. By the way, parenthetical aside, I like to talk. I'm a rabbi. I like to talk. If I say something you don't understand, if you have a question, just stop me, and feel free to chime in. So don't be afraid.
I do have a question. I was waiting.
Yes, you're waiting for the permission to interject.
You sort of edit. Well, I don't know if it's real, but you said something that I think if I just had an impression of Qohelet on a simple level from what I know, I would say it's not that hard to understand. It's basically a king sort of saying that materialism is sort of fruitless, and the opposite of that is however you understand the last thing, fear of Hashem, but basically he's warning the people that there isn't a lot of gain to be had in material values. It's not that controversial to say such a thing.
I will reserve judgment on how controversial Qohelet is for a moment, and I ask you to do the same. I will show you why Qohelet is so controversial. Okay. The problem is you're correct in some places. There are some places in Qohelet where he says exactly what you said. There are other places in Qohelet where he says the exact opposite of what you just said. And there are other places in Qohelet where he spews heresy, nothing short of. And this is the problem with Qohelet. Let's address the Gemara first, and then I'll come back to this question. Amar Rav Yehuda Breider of Shmuel by Shilat Mishmei Derav, Bikshu Chachamim Lignoz Sefer Qohelet. The sages wanted to bury, meaning to bury Sefer Qohelet, to put it into Gniza. It's another way of saying to excise it from the canon of the Bible, to remove it from Tanakh. That is a major. Understand the significance of what that means. Chazal sat and deliberated whether or not this book belongs in Tanakh. This is already the second generation of this debate. This is a debate of whether or not it should be removed from the Bible. I will show you in a moment the Mishnah that records the debate about whether or not it should have been included in the first place. In fact, why don't we go down to that first? Take a look at source number 3 on the bottom of the page. Kol kitvei hakodesh mitamin et hayadayim. Mishnah Masechet Yadayim discusses a concept called tumat yadayim. Tumat yadayim refers to a rabbinic decree of impurity specifically upon one's hands for various things. It's the source of netilat yadayim before we eat bread. Comes from the context of the Kohanim and the Beit HaMikdash. The rabbis decreed a special status of Tumat Yadayim that one would take on if they touched any of the books of Tanakh. A Sefer in Tanakh renders one's hands impure Tameh. Why? It's actually counterintuitive. Here you have a Sefer which is Kodesh. By definition of being put into the canon of the Tanakh, we are saying it is Kodesh, and it renders your hands tummy. What's the connection?
So people don't store teruma.
Right. And the story is historical. Not hysterical, historical. The story goes back to a time when the Kohanim, who had truma, which was Kodesh, and had to be eaten in a state of tuma, of tara, they wanted to preserve this truma, which could be made of which we bread or any kind of food of various kinds. They wanted to put it somewhere that was Kodesh and Tahor, so they knew that it wouldn't become Tamei. So they started to hide their, it's a remarkable fact, they started to hide their Truma in Sifrei Kodesh. The assumption was, it's Truma is Kodesh, put it into a place where you keep other things that are Kodesh, like an Aron Kodesh. So they would take their Truma and stick it to the Aron Kodesh and protect it there out of Amaratzus. You can't put food in the Aron Kodesh, but out of Amaratzus, Kohanim in time of Baicheni were not known for their great Talmudic wisdom. And that was a phenomenon the rabbis saw and were abhorred by. They needed to stop it somehow. And it's an interesting phenomenon, because you would think that the way to stop it was to simply stand up and say, don't do it. But clearly they couldn't do that because nobody would listen to them. Surprise, surprise. So instead they had to frighten the Kohanim into submission by decreeing a state of impurity, a state of tumah imbued by the very Sifrei Kodesh that they were hiding their truma amongst, thereby rendering the truma puzzle, and Kohanim were particularly meticulous about the Tahara issue. They were far more careful about Tahara than they were about listening to the rabbis. So in the moment the rabbi said, Sifrei Kodesh are Tamei, the Kohanim stopped doing it. It's a fascinating sociological piece on commentary on that period of time. In that context, what emerged was a status. A sefer that was included in the canon of Tanakh, had Kedusha, was considered Tame Yadayim, Mitame Yadayim, was considered that which renders your hands impure. A sefer that was not part of the canon of the Bible rendered no tumah. That's the rule. So it's counterintuitive. If it has Kedusha, it creates tumah. If it doesn't have Kedusha, it creates no tumah. That's the rule. It's a fascinating piece into itself. Says the Mishnah, in the context of Kol Kitvei HaKodesh Metamin Et HaYadayim, that all the books of Tanakh caused this kind of tumah, here's a list of certain books over which they were not sure. Shir HaShirim B'Kohelet Metamin Et HaYadayim. Shir HaShirim and Kohelet render one's hands impure. Meaning? They're included in Tanakh. That's a chiddush. Now we take it for granted. You open up any Tanakh and it has both Kohelet and Shir HaShirim in it. Chazal didn't take it for granted. They're both written by Shlomo HaMelech. They're both controversial for different reasons, but they're both controversial. And over both of them, Chazal engaged in a major debate as to whether they should or should not be included in Tanakh. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shir HaShirim Metame Et HaYadayim B'Kohelet Machloket. Rabbi Yehuda says, wait a second, Shir HaShirim is in. Kohelet, they're still debating. Bayit Sheni, time of Yavne, they're still debating whether Kohelet belongs in the canon of the Bible. Rabbi Yosi Omer, Kohelet Eino Metame Et HaYadayim V'Shir HaShirim Machloket. Rabbi Yosi said, Kohelet's out. Shir HaShirim, they're debating in the halls of the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kohelet Mikule Beit Shammai Mochume Beit Hillel. Rabbi Shimon said, no, Kohelet is a machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says out, Beit Hillel says in. Rabbi Shimon ben Azai Omer, Mekubal ani mipi shivim v'shtayim zaken b'yom shoshivit Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah b'yeshiva. Sheshir HaShirim B'Kohelet Metamin Et HaYadayim, says Rabbi Shimon ben Azai, I have a tradition that on the day that they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah the head of the yeshiva, they determined that Shir HaShirim and Kohelet are both in. Amar Rabbi Akiva, a very famous statement of Rabbi Akiva, Chas V'Shalom L'Nechlak Adam Yisrael Al Shir HaShirim. God forbid nobody ever debated Shir HaShirim, that one should even entertain the possibility that Shir HaShirim is not in Kohelet, is not in Tanakh. The world was not worthy of that day when Shir HaShirim was given to the world. If the rest of Sifrei Tanakh Kodesh, Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodesh. They wanted a debate, the debate was over Kohelet. In other words, What's going on here is that there was a tradition, there was an understanding, there was a masoret that there was at some point a major debate about the books of Shlomo HaMelech, and the rabbis in this Mishnah weren't clear as to which books they were debating. Was it Shir HaShirim? Was it Kohelet? Was it both? Was it neither? Here's the punchline. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Yehoshua ben Chamiv shel Rabbi Akiva kedivrei ben Azai kach nechleku v'kach gamru. After all of the opinions have been stated, the correct opinion is that of ben Azai, that Shir HaShirim and Kohelet were both the subject of a major debate, and that debate was decided in favor of inclusion. The debate was decided in favor of inclusion, each for a different reason, because the question at hand is different for Shir HaShirim than it is for Kohelet. We'll see what the issue with Kohelet was. Shir HaShirim, the question revolved around whether it was allegorical or whether it was a love sonnet to his 1,000 wives. Simple. What was the nature of Shir HaShirim? What was the nature of Shlomo HaMelech's marriage to his 1,000 wives? Ultimately, the question of Shir HaShirim really revolves around the question of the status of Shlomo HaMelech and why he married 1,000 wives and concubines. That in itself is a machloket in the Gemara. One opinion says he married them because he wanted to include all these kingdoms in the broad umbrella of Israel and Torah and Jewish values, and wanted to, as the Gemara calls it, the karvan tachat kanfei ashkina, to spread the canopy of Judaism as wide as he could as the king of Israel. Another opinion says he married them mishum znut, because he liked to have 1,000 wives. Now, you understand, if that's the debate, then Shir HaShirim is in question. The debate over Shir HaShirim parallels the debate over who is Shlomo and what is the nature of his relationship and his marriages. Put that issue aside, assuming that we accept Shlomo HaMelech and his wives and Shir HaShirim, we have a new issue, namely Kohelet. And by the majority of opinions, not all, but the majority of opinions suggest that Shlomo HaMelech wrote Kohelet at the end of his life and Shir HaShirim at the beginning of his life. Or the early years. Mishlei somewhere in the middle.
So could you put a time parameter on this?
Not yet.
Explain.
It's certainly the end of his life. Based on what we will do with Kohelet and how we will interpret Kohelet, I could pinpoint Kohelet to the last 5 years of his life.
So this is year 500?
In what period of time are we talking about? Shlomo HaMelech lives. Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beit HaMikdash 480 years after the after Yitziat Mitzrayim. What year is Yitziat Mitzrayim? I don't remember years. It's approximately 3,000 years ago, so we're talking about 1,000 BC, give or take a couple hundred years. But if we talk about 400 years of Bayit Sheni, and 400 years of Bayit Rishon, and then 100 years in between, so we're looking at approximately 3,000 years ago.
But the Gemara was written.
The Gemara is much later. The Gemara is in the 5th, 6th century of the Common Era.
The Mishnah was in the 2nd century.
Right. The Gemara is debating whether or not we should include the text of Kohelet in the books of Tanakh. Now, you can say, well, what did they do for the last 1,000 years? Right. They debated whether or not Kohelet should be in Tanakh or not. No, that's not a facetious statement. There was no unanimous consensus during Bayit Rishon as to which books are included in Tanakh. Yavne is essentially the period of Bayit Sheni. By Cheney, there's a proliferation of books that are Tanakh lookalikes. They're called Sifrei Chitzoniim. They are affectionately known as the Apocrypha, and they're called that because they're outside the canon of the Bible. You understand that if a book is included in the canon of the Bible, by definition, it's not part of the Sefer Chitzonim. Sefer Chitzonim means it's excluded from the canon of Tanakh. That debate rages over the period of Second Temple. it's concluded during the period of Yavne. One of the things that they did in Yavne was put a stamp, a final stamp, on which books of Tanakh are in and which books are out. And they excluded many books. Sefer HaMakkabim was out. Sefer Ben Sira. Sefer Mishlei Shlomo. Sefer, which is not the same as Sefer Mishlei. A whole series of books. We have a collection of them called the Apocrypha, Sferim Chitzoniyim. I'll show you a reference to that in a moment. Why did they want to exclude Kohelet? What was such a big deal about Kohelet? Mordechai, you said earlier, it's a very nice message from a king to his students, to his disciples, to his subjects about the ills of excess. Says the Gemara, Amar of Yehuda, back to source number one where we started. Amar of Yehuda, Breder of Shmuel by Shilat Mishmei Derav. Bikshu Chachamim Lignoz Sefer Kohelet. The sages sought to excise Kohelet or exclude Kohelet. Mipnei Shedvarav Sotrin Ze Et Ze. Because it is self-contradictory. They saw in Kohelet a book of inconsistent messages. Now that's a partial answer, and I'll show you why. But that's the beginning of our discussion. So if that's the case, why didn't they exclude it? Because Kohelet starts with Torah and ends with Torah. It starts kosher, it ends kosher. The fact that in the middle, it's self-contradictory, okay, it's a big deal. Now, before we even get into the question of what the contradictions are and the beginning and the end, note immediately that there's an inconsistency in this Gemara. The answer doesn't match the question. Why? What's the problem with Kohelet according to the question?
That it's
self-contradictory. What's the solution?
That it begins and ends with Torah.
Nobody questioned the fact that it begins and ends with Torah. Chazal questioned the fact that it's full of contradictions. Who cares where it starts and ends? Because I started somewhere and I ended somewhere. The fact that I reverse course on myself 12 times in the middle doesn't make a difference.
But that's the answer to why they didn't put it in Gemara.
But it's an inconsistent answer. The answer doesn't answer the question. In other words, the answer would be correct if the question was, why is Kohelet not in Tanakh? Because it's full of? No. The answer would be correct if the question was, right, the answer is, it begins with Torah and it ends with Torah. That's a correct answer if the question was, Kohelet is not in Tanakh because it's full of?
Non-Torah.
Values that are contradictory to Torah. Answer, Tchilato Divrei Torah, Besofo Divrei Torah, it starts with Torah, it ends with Torah, it's fine. It's kosher. Nobody, in the question, there wasn't an issue about the kashrut of the ideology, the question was the fact that it's contradictory. The answer that the Gemara gives to why including Kohelet seems to address an issue that is different than the question that was asked. That's a subtlety. But I bring it up because I will show you in a moment that there's another version of this discussion in the Medrash, which actually says that the reason why Chazal wanted to exclude Kohelet was because Dvarav Notin Divrei Minut. Not because it's self-contradictory, but because it sounds like it's full of kfira. It sounds like it's full of heresy. And only when they were satisfied that they could resolve the heretical parts of Kohelet were they prepared to include it in Tanakh. That a sefer is full of contradictions is not necessarily a reason to exclude it from Tanakh. Contradictions don't scare anybody. Gemara is full of contradictions. But heresy is problematic. So let's finish the Gemara for a moment and then I'll show you what the Gemara is referring. First, the Gemara digresses and says, okay, where's the Torah? תחילתו דברי תורה דכתיב, מה יתרון לאדם בכל עמלו שיעמול תחת השמש. The beginning is Torah because it starts with the expression, what is the advantage of the toiler who toils under the sun? תחת השמש הוא דיין לו, קודם השמש יש לו. Under the sun, there's no value. But above the sun, there is value. Meaning, a reference to Olam Haba. סופו דברי תורה דכתיב, סוף דבר כל נשמת אלוקים יראה ומצותיו שמור כי זה כל האדם. The Kohelet ends with Torah is clear. The Kohelet has a very clear articulation. At the end of all the arguments having been heard, סוף דבר הכל נשמע, fear God, observe the commandments, that's the mandate of man. זה כל האדם. ומאי דבריו סותרים זה את זה, where's the contradiction? So we said. In one verse it says, טוב כעס משחוק. Anger is better than laughter. Uchtiv, in another verse it says, Lishok amarti meholal, I praised laughter. So make up your mind. Either you prefer anger to laughter, or you praise laughter. You can't do both. Ktiv, v'shibachti ani et ha-simcha. One place it says, I praised joy. And in another place it says, ulesimcha mazo asa. What does joy get you in life? Contradiction. Conflicting values. Then the Gemara says, once I've established that everything is Torah and it all emanates from one source, then look, Asher, I can resolve the issue. Tov kas mischok, tov kas shekoes haKadosh Baruch Hu al tzaddikim b'olam hazeh, mischok shemesachek haKadosh Baruch Hu al harishaim b'olam hazeh. Right, the laughter, the anger that God shows on the righteous in this world is better than the laughter and the joy that God gives to the rishayim in this world. Why? Because in Olam Haba, tzaddikim will get the just reward, and the Rishayim will get their full punishment. Ulischok amarti mehulal, I praise joy. Schok shemisachek haKadosh Baruch Hu metzaddikim b'Olam Haba. That's the joy of Olam Haba. This praise, the joy that I praise, v'shibachta ni tasimcha, is a reference to simcha shel mitzvah. Ulesimcha mazo asa, the rejection of joy is simcha she'ena shel mitzvah. It's a levity that's not based on Torah mitzvah. So I can resolve, once I know that my Kohelet is anchored in Torah, both at the beginning and at the end, I can resolve the contradictions by understanding they're both worldviews that emanate from a Torah personality and a Torah perspective. And that ultimately is why they allow Kohelet to remain in the canon of Tanakh. Yes?
Could this mean that if there's Torah at the beginning, Torah at the end, and then there is in the middle, it's still okay?
Well, that's my question. Torah at the beginning and Torah at the end doesn't excuse the heresy in the middle. And Kohelet is full of it, literally. We'll get there in a moment. But
this assumption? This is Shlomo HaMelech after all. Why do you even come upon an assumption that it's heresy?
I'll show you.
Torah at the beginning and Torah at the end.
Let's leave the heresy for a moment. Let's leave the heresy for a moment. I know it's a harsh term to use in the Beit Knesset. Let's leave the kfira out of the picture for a second. Let's talk about contradictions. The Gemara points to essentially one type of contradiction, the value of simcha. I collected for you, from the introduction of the Dat Mikra commentary on Kohelet, there's a very good job of going through all of Kohelet and pulling out most of the values that are reflected in contradictory terms. So you have, for example, in the third page, a chart. It looks like this. And it's simply a collection of psukim on various themes that Kohelet presents alternative views on. Just do a smattering, a few examples. Take a look at the second box. Chaim v'amavet, life and death. In one place in Kohelet, in the right-hand box, he writes, "Yigiyu shanim asher toma ein li bahem chefetz." The end of one's life, old age, years a person doesn't want. "Shabeach ani et hametim shekvar metu min hachayim asher hem hachayim adena." I praise the dead over the living who are still alive. Kohelet, in a number of places, says he'd rather be dead than alive. And in other places, he says, a live dog is better than a dead lion. Because the only value is, the most important value is
life.
A person should live a long life and enjoy in them. So either he wants to die or he wants to live. The classic Simcha and the Evel is the classic example that everybody points to. The Gemara pointed it out already. That's the middle box. There are many examples there of the contradiction. But let's take a look at wisdom and sages, Chachamim and Chochmah. On the right hand side, he writes, wisdom has advantage over folly, over foolishness. It's a good thing to listen to the rebuke of the wise. There's an advantage always to wisdom. The wise will give life to its owner. Wisdom will give life to its owner. The words of the wise are listened to easily. And on the other hand, he writes, what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? Lo lachachamim lechem, the wise will not achieve bread. Chochmat hamisken bzuya odvarav enam nishma'im, the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not listened to. Either listened to or aren't they listened to? One of the most controversial, of course, is the last paragraph. Re'ei chayim me'isha. Go find your life with your wife. And on the other hand, he writes, Adam echad me'elef matzati, isha b'cholel lelo matzati. A famous verse, I find a woman a fate worse than death. Well, let's take a look at his view on reward and punishment. This is where he starts to get controversial. His view on reward and punishment. Yodea ani, asher yeh tov liyodea elokim, I know that it will be good for those who fear God. Hatzadik ve'tarasha yishpot elokim. God will judge the righteous and the wicked. Ki et lechol chefetz ve'alkom ma'asesha. For there is a time and a place for everything. God will judge the righteous and he will judge the wicked. And on the other hand, he writes, Yesh tzadik oved b'tzidko, v'yesh rasha ma'anich b'ra'ato. There are some righteous who are destroyed in their righteousness, and others who are wicked, who live long lives in their wickedness. Don't be too righteous, don't be too wicked. Yesh tzadikim asher magi alehem kimaseh rasha'im, v'yesh rasha'im asher magi alehem kimaseh tzadikim. There are some righteous who live the life that really should be the life of the wicked, and there are some wicked who live the life that should belong to the righteous. And my favorite, Ein ma'aseh v'cheshbon v'dat v'chochmah b'sha'ol asher ata olech shama. There is no knowledge, no deed, no accounting, no wisdom, no understanding in the grave to which you go. So does he accept the principle of divine retribution, reward, and punishment? Or doesn't he? Forget the heresy here. Forget the kfira for a moment. Where is his philosophical position in life? And these are just a smattering collections throughout the sefer. So what do we do with Kohelet? The truth of the matter is that, as I said earlier, I think the contradictions are actually far less the issue than the kfira. Because Kohelet, more than any other sefer that you will find, Kohelet is full of values and concepts and principles that at first blush, and if you read them at face value, are truly antithetical to everything Torah tries to convey. And if Chazal were worried about the words of Kohelet contradicting themselves, what Chazal should really have been worried about is the words of Kohelet contradicting the rest of Torah. And in the version in the Medrash, Kohelet Rabbah, this Gemara is quoted in exactly that way. Why did Chazal want to hide Kohelet? Because Dvarav notin lederech minut, because its words are heretical. And only when they were assured that Tichilata Divrei Torah v'Sofa Divrei Torah were they prepared to accept that there's some way to include all of this Kfira under an umbrella of Torah and accept it into the canon of Tanakh. But it's very hard to read Kohelet and not see this kind of antithetical position to Judaism, to Torah. I'll give you a couple of examples. Let's take a look at the psukim that I just read earlier. Let's take a look at them inside. Open up to Perek Tet. Take a look at Perek Tet. Kol ze natati el libi v'lavur et kol ze asher atzadikim mi'achachamim v'avadehem b'yad ha'elohim. Gam ahava gam sina en yodeh adam makol lifnehem. So that's a very difficult pasuk to understand in and of itself. I really... Let's start from pasuk bet for reasons which I'll clarify later. Hakol kasher lakol. There's one ending for all. Mikre echad latzadik v'larasha. There is one resolution, one fate for the righteous and the wicked. Latov v'latahor v'latameh. To the good, to the pure, to the impure. Lazaveach v'lasher nenazaveach. To those who sacrifice, to those who don't sacrifice. Katov kachote. The good, the sinner. Hanishpa kashesh v'ayare. Those who take an oath, those who fear the oath. All end up in the same place with the same fate. This is evil under the sun. That there should be one fate for all. And man's heart is full of evil all day long. One who is linked to life, one who is alive, so he has some kind of safety and security. At least he is alive. Ki lekelav chay utov min hayamet. A live dog is better than a dead lion. Ki achayim yodim shiyamutu. The living know they're going to die. Hametim enam yodim meuma. The dead know nothing. Ve'ein od lahem sachar. And they have no more reward, for their memory is forgotten. Gam avatam, gam sinatam, gam kinatam, kravada, their love, their hatred, their jealousy, everything's forgotten. Chelek ein lahem od le'olam. They have no more portion for eternity. V'chol ha'shena satachat ha'shamesh, anything under the sun. Therefore, he comes to a conclusion. What's the logical implication of such a conclusion? Lech echol besimcha lachmecha ushtei belev tov yenecha. Go and drink and go and eat. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Comes from source. Eat, drink, and be merry. Well, drink, eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Forget the be merry part. Source. Eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Achol v'nishte ki machar namut. Yeshayahu. It's one of those famous quotes, everybody quotes Shakespeare and Epicure. All over the map, comes from Yeshayahu. Achol v'shato ki machar namut. Pasuk Yud. Kol asher timsa yatcha asot v'kochacha ase. Anything in your power to do, if you can get away with it, do it. Ki ein ma'ase v'cheshbon v'dat v'chokma mishaol asher ata olech shama. For in the grave to which you go, there is no knowledge, no accounting, no deeds, no wisdom. There is nothing. I don't know about you, but I ain't comfortable with this. Are we all in agreement that this is not Torah values view, even for Tanakh? This is not a classic Tanakh or Torah point of view. I'll give you another powerful example. Take a look in Perek Chet. Pasuk Yud. Let's start with Pasuk Yud Aleph. Asher ein nahasa pitgam ma'aseh hara'a mehera al kein male lev b'nei ha'adam b'hem la'asot ra. Very famous concept. Because justice is not served quickly, man's heart is filled with evil. Who was it who said? Justice must be perceived. If you don't punish the wicked, it's not enough to say the wicked will be punished. When? Bis 120, in Olam Abba, the wicked will be punished. And in the meantime, they're having a field day. They're having a great time. And the rest of mankind is looking on and saying, crime pays, evil pays, because there's no punishment. Because the sinner will do sin 100 times and he'll have long life for it. The second half of this phrase leave out for now. Pasuk Yudalid, Yesh hevel asher nasa la'aretz, there is vanity upon this earth, or there is hevel, whatever hevel means. Asher yesh tzadikim asher magi alehem k'maseh ha'rasha'im. V'yesh rasha'im asher magi alehem k'maseh ha'tzadikim. There are the righteous who live the life of the wicked. And there are the wicked who live the life that should come to the righteous. Amarti shekam zahava. So I concluded that this is all futile. V'shibachti ani et asimcha. So I therefore chose to praise joy. Asher ein tov la'adam tachat ha'shemesh ki'im le'echol v'lishtot v'lismoach. For there's nothing better for man to do than to eat, drink, and be merry. Because that's the only thing you have. That's the only reality you can work with. Eat, drink, and be merry. Where's the Simcha Shel Mitzvah here? Because I'll say it's Simcha Shel Mitzvah. Where's the Simcha Shel Mitzvah? It's enormously problematic. So the assertion that Kohelet is controversial because it's self-contradictory is only part of the picture. Its real substantive challenge is that it is a philosophical worldview that is contradictory and at places heretical. Now, at the same time, Kohelet is enormously spiritual. At the same time, yes.
But could the two be just synonymous?
Meaning?
Meaning that it's contradictory of Torah, therefore heretical.
Yes, that is the definition of heresy.
Right, so it's contrary, I mean, it's the...
No, its contradiction to Torah is one issue, its contradiction to itself. When Chazal talked about the stirot, it was talking about the internal contradiction. What I mean by internal contradiction is it presents worldviews and philosophical perspectives that are at odds with each other.
But isn't that the nature of a philosophical debate?
Oh, so you've used a very critical term that has not been discussed right now. You used a word just now that has not entered into our discussion yet. It will in about 5 minutes. You know what word I'm talking about?
Debate.
Right. But I'll come back to that. That's already a whole different perspective on Kohelet that I'm not sure Chazal put on the table. But we'll come back to that in a moment. But at the same time, the Kohelet is filled with this hatred of and this venom towards spirituality and towards this notion of denying any kind of retribution and consequences, spiritual consequences, to the point of virtually denying God. Kohelet is also enormously spiritual. Kohelet talks about God. Kohelet talks about Hakol Asaya Febi Ito, everything that God did, how wonderful it was in its proper time. Kohelet talks about the beauty of the world. Kohelet in Perek Hey talks about the Bet Mikdash. It talks about guarding your mouth against God. Don't be critical of God. Take a look at Perek Hey Pasuk Aleph. Al Tevahel Al Picha. Do not be hasty with your mouth. That, by the way, is a pun. That is a pun. Not an uncommon phenomenon in the Torah. The Torah was written with a sense of humor, in a sense, at least with a pun. Concept which the Rishonim call Lashon. I spelled it correctly, it would be easier. Lashon Nafel Al Lashon. Alliteration or some kind of play with words. We just had an example of this in the parsha this past week. One of the most powerful examples. Shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishafech. Man spills blood, man is responsible for the accountability. But it's formulated in this play on the word dam and adam. Shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishafech. The theme of Kohelet is hevel. And suddenly we have Al Tivahel. Don't spew so much hevel. Al Tivahel, which literally means don't be hasty. Bahala. But it's a pun. It's a use of language. That's Al Tivahel Al Picha. Don't be hasty to speak out against God. Because God is in the heavens. And you are in the ground. Your words should be few. Don't be so critical of God. Don't be so quick to haste and to chastise God. Does that sound like the same Kohelet who wrote Yesh Tzadikim Shemagi, or better yet, who wrote Kol Asher B'yadcha B'Kocha Asei Ki Ein Dat V'Chochma V'Maaseh V'Cheshbon B'She'ol Shata Olech Shama, that there's no accounting and there's no knowledge and there's no wisdom and there's nothing in the grave, so you might as well do whatever you want to do in life? How does the same person write these two things? So if we're looking at this in the perspective of, let's call it biblical criticism for lack of a better term, I would argue that they're written by different authors and solves the problem. I don't have that simple solution in the arsenal of Parshanut HaMikra. So we are left with a query. So Chazal talked about it in terms of the contradictions. Our issue is in terms of the depth of the seeming heresy that is involved in this sefer. So what do we do with Kohelet? The truth of the matter is, let's start from the question of what Chazal were debating. Chazal were debating whether or not Kohelet belongs in Tanakh. By what criteria would Chazal have determined what books are included in Tanakh and what books should not be included in Tanakh? Take a look, for example, in source number 4. Source number 4 is really a continuation of the sources we started with earlier. Ko Yisrael Yesh Lem Chelek Olam Haba, the first Mishnah in the 10th or 11th parak of Sanhedrin. Every person has a share in the world to come, with the exception of the following. It's interesting Mishnah. Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek le'olam haba, ve'elu she'en lam chelek le'olam haba. And everybody has a share except for those who fit into the following categories. What are those categories? Number one, ha'omer en tchiyat ha'metim in ha'Torah. Somebody who denies the principle of tchiyat ha'metim. Ve'en ha'Torah min ha'shamayim. Somebody who denies the principle of divine origin of the Torah. Ve'apikoros, and an apikoros or an epicurean, whatever that term means. Adz Rabbi Akiva, af Rabbi Akiva omer, af ha'kore b'sfarim ha'chitzoniyim. Even to be included in those who don't have a share in the world to come are those who read the external books. Now, in the polemic of Torah Umada, Sfarim Chitzoniyim has been used to describe non-Torah books like science and medicine and math and, you know, and English literature and art and what. That's Sfarim Chitzoniyim. But that's not what Chazal were referring to. When Chazal referred to Sfarim Chitzoniyim, they were referring specifically to a corpus of books known to us as the Apocryphal or Sfarim Chitzoniyim, books that Chazal determined were outside the purview of Tanakh. Says Rabbi Akiva, anybody who reads them falls into the category of somebody who doesn't have a share in the world to come. It's an astonishing statement because it sounds like Rabbi Akiva was essentially arguing against what? I read this superficially. What is Rabbi Akiva arguing against? Am I allowed to read Ben Sira?
No.
No. Am I allowed to read Mishlei Shlomo? Am I allowed? The only problem is, I can tell you that Ben Sira is quoted in the Gemara at least 20 times. So every sage in the Talmud who quotes Ben Sira is in violation of Rabbi Akiva's statement and therefore shouldn't have a share in the world to come? The Rishonim quote this, the Apocrypha all the time. Say for a Maccabim as part of the... It doesn't make sense. So what does it mean? Rabbi Akiva wasn't talking about the question of whether or not you can open it up, read it and study it and try to understand the Sefer. Rabbi Akiva was talking about a phenomenon of reading a book in a formal sense that would grant it the status of Tanakh. How do you grant something the status of Tanakh? Today, here's how we grant something the status of Tanakh. We print it. And they didn't have printed books, they had scrolls. A book was written on a scroll. So how do you determine whether a scroll... How do you, if you wanted to demonstrate that a book belonged to the canon of Tanakh, what would you have to do? So, Chazal talked about Tumat Yadayim, but what would the populace do? What would you and I do if we wanted to take a book and we wanted to make it part of the canon of Tanakh?
Print it,
circulate it, but if there's no printing, there's only scrolls, what are you going to do with it? Circulate it. Here, this is an interesting read. If you read this and tell me if you like it, we'll put it in the Bible next week. Or, how many of you are familiar with the story of Megillat HaShoah? Hasn't come to St. Louis? Really? Okay. Well, I can't use that as an example. There's an attempt within the conservative movement to introduce a new book into Tanakh. It's called Megillat HaShoah. Somebody wrote it as a Megillah of the account of the Holocaust, and they read it publicly on a scroll every year on Yom HaShoah. That's what you would do if you wanted to introduce a new book into the Bible. You would write it on a scroll, and you would read it publicly. That's what Rabbi Akiva said. Anybody who reads Sfarim Chitzonim, he's talking about reading them publicly. There's a reason why we don't read Sefer HaMakkabim on Chanukah. Because it's not in Tanakh. And by the way, it works the other way around. There's a Mishnah that says anybody who sings songs from Shir HaShirim in the Beit Mishteh, in the bars, and sings them as love sonnets, also doesn't have a share in the world to come. Because it's the reverse. Right? It's in the wrong, because it's in reverse. So what criteria do you use to determine that Kohelet is in and Ben Sira is out? That's how you would demonstrate it. But when Chazal is sitting and deliberating and adjudicating, should it be, shouldn't it be? On what variable, what basis are they going to make that determination? Is Kohelet a sefer that has within it heretical views? Yes. Is it a sefer that has within it Torah views, positive, uplifting, spiritual values? Yes. Is Mishlei a sefer that has within it views that are problematic? Yes. Is Iyov a sefer that has within it views that are problematic? Yes. Iyov is in. Ben Sira is out. Ben Sira also is a wonderful sefer full of Yirat Shamayim, because I'll quote it all the time. So why is Ben Sira out and Kohelet in?
I thought the criteria was that it had to have an eternal message as opposed to a timely or time-bound message.
Okay, so determine that Kohelet's message is timely and Ben Sira's is not. Right, that's the problem. I think the answer revolves around the fact that a book can include views that are challenging to Torah. A book in Tanakh, especially the books of philosophy, have within them the right to challenge us and make us think. Iyov makes us think. And it's filled with pages upon pages of views that are antithetical to Torah. The difference is that Iyov ends, or that Iyov essentially challenges God but doesn't criticize. It doesn't critique. It doesn't come to the conclusion that God is wrong. It doesn't come to the conclusion that Torah is wrong. It comes to a conclusion that there are questions. And questions are legitimate. But it doesn't conclude in a manner of bikoret that says this view of Torah or this value of Torah or this principle of Torah I disagree with. Because we don't have the right to disagree. We can challenge, we can question, we can probe, we can think, but at the end of the day, we have to accept. Iyov, as challenging as it is, comes to a conclusion. That is a positive conclusion that includes it within the spectrum of a philosophical worldview of Torah. Kohelet does the same thing. It challenges us. It provokes us. It creates discord and discomfort within us. But it concludes, Sof Devar Kol Nishmat Elokim Yirah. Its conclusion is within the purview and the parameters of a Torah worldview. And that's what Chazal meant when it says Sofot Divrei Torah. Along the journey, we can question, we can challenge. I'll go one step further. How many of you have ever read Iyov? Even a superficial reading of Iyov? Simple, superficial, just the text, without necessarily even a level of understanding. Most of us. What's the basic structure of Iyov? What's the structure of Sefer Iyov? Mm-hmm. Forget content, forget message, just the structure of the book. There's Iyov. Iyov is a story of a dialogue between
the friends
of Iyov and Iyov. In each chapter, Iyov is challenged by his friends. Vayan Eliphaz Vayoma. Vayan, each one turns and says, so and so says, I'll just read you the opening line of one chapter after another. You don't even have to look at it. Just listen. Vayan Iyov Vayoma. Perek Gimel. Vayan Iyov Vayoma. Perek Dalet. Vayan Eliphaz HaTemani Vayoma. Perek Vav, Vayan Iyov Vayoma. Perek Chet, Vayan Bildad Hashuchi Vayoma. Perek Tet, Vayan Iov, Vayomar. Perek Yud Aleph, Vayan Sofar Anamati, Vayomar. Perek Yud Bet, Vayan Iov, Vayomar. Vayan Eliphaz, Vayan Iov, Vayan Bildad Ashuchi, Vayan Iov, Vayan Sofar Anamati, Vayan Iov. Do you get the picture? It's a debate. It's a dialogue. What would happen? Now remember that each one of these friends has a personality, it has a philosophy, it has a worldview that it's trying to espouse, it's trying to challenge Eov. Each one of the friends represents a different approach to the resolution of the question of Eov's plight. And to each one of those friends, Eov responds differently. What would happen if I took Eov, and I removed from the beginning of each chapter three words? What would happen if I took Eov and I removed from the beginning of each chapter the words Vaya'an Ploni Vayomar? I took them out of the picture. Put them, cut, paste, take them out. What would Eov now look like?
He's self-contradicting himself.
What?
He would be debating with himself.
It would be full of contradiction. It would read like one text, without a beginning, without an end. Right? You never know where one speech is starting, where the next one is finishing. It would be full of contradictions. It would make no sense. It would be full of heresy. In short, you'd have
Kohelet.
In short, you'd have Kohelet. Take a look at source number 5. This is the Me'iri in his introduction to Mishlei. He's going through all of the various books of Shlomo, analysis of the books of Shlomo Melech, and he mentions with regards to Kohelet, Mazkir Dat HaHofchiyim mentions contrasting views, Aminugadim, V'yomed Poseach V'navoch, and he stands there looking at this view, confused, between multiple views. Ezu yichshar, ze or haze. Which one of these views is going to be victorious? This one or that one? Kemo sheyadua shelomez b'ktzat mekomot ta'anot hamitnagdim aleinu be'emunat hapinot hatoriyot. As it's clear in many places, Kohelet mentions views that are in contrast to the view of Torah, says the Me'iri. B'chidush ha'olam, for example, with regards to the creation of the world, v'shinui tva'im, or with regards to change of nature, v'ashkacha, or divine providence, or gemul va'onesh, or reward and punishment, a couple of minor issues with which Kohelet takes heretical views. V'choker u'mishtadel b'diyat ha'dvarim, seeking to understand these things, miderech chakira v'iyun, in a manner of analysis and philosophical debate, umazkir data of chayim v'ta'anot mitchalfot, and therefore he mentions contrasting views and views that are in contradiction to each other. And the Meiri's thesis, and it's also the suggestion made by a number of commentaries of Yitzchak Arama in Akedat Yitzchak, is that our problem with understanding Kohelet is that we read Kohelet linearly. We assume that every verse matches every other verse and has to, and therefore when we come to contradiction, we have to come up with some kind of midrashic approach to the contradiction. If it comes to heresy, we have to either assume that the text is not from Tanakh, it's not a kosher text, or that it is somehow, that this isn't really heresy, but midrashically we can kind of work around it. Says the Meiri, take the Sefer at face value. If there are places in the Sefer where Kohelet spews heresy, it's because he's presenting heretical views. And if there are other places where he presents a Torah outlook, it's because he's challenging those views with a Torah perspective. And there are, in fact, more than one view here. There's more than one voice in Sefer Qehelet. What I will attempt to demonstrate over the next week or two is exactly how many voices there are in Qehelet. There are, in fact, four. And if we can identify the voices of Qehelet, what each voice represents, who is the Eov and who are the friends? Who are the different personalities that are debating amongst themselves in the context of Sefer Qehelet? Then what we will find is that Qehelet is not a book, it's a play. It's a drama between each of these personalities and what they believe in, what they philosophize over, and they're debating with each other, they're communicating with each other, they are relating to each other. And Qehelet is a drama, it's a play. The challenge we have is to figure out who are the players. And to do that, we're going to have to go back to the worldview of Shlomo HaMelech. We're going to have to understand who Shlomo HaMelech is, because the difference between Eov and Qehelet, why in Eov does it say Vayan Eov Vayomer Vayan Eliphaz Zatemani Vayomer Vayan Bildad Ashuchi Vayomer, and in Qehelet it doesn't? It's very easy to say, just take those phrases out and you have Qehelet. But at the end of the day, Eov has those, tells me who's speaking, and Qehelet doesn't. Why not? Because in Eov, those people who are challenging Eov are... Who's challenging Eov? Who are Eldad HaShuchi and Bedad HaShuchi and Eliphaz HaTemani, etc.? Who are they?
Friends.
They're people. Eov is sitting around, Eov is a judge. Eov is sitting around with his friends in the Shar HaIr, and he's discussing his plight, and his friends are challenging him. So I have a dialogue. Qehelet, we aren't dealing with four people. We're dealing with four dimensions of the same personality. We're dealing with four voices that are part of Shlomo HaMelech. Ani Qehelet, says Shlomo HaMelech. Ani Qehelet. Rav Yoav ben Nun once suggested that Qehelet, there are many explanations for what the word Qehelet means. Kehel chochmot harbei, gathered many. The classic is that it comes from the word l'hakil, which is to gather. Gathered much chochmah. The Rav Yoav ben Nun's creative suggestion is that it comes from the word makhela, which is acquire. Qehelet is a choir of voices. Four. One talks about simcha, the other will talk about toil, the other will talk about chokhmah and wisdom, and the fourth will talk about yirat elokim. And each has a philosophy, each has an ideology, each has a personality. They emanate from Shlomo. They're not divorced from Shlomo. They emanate from the makelah of internal dynamic of Shlomo's mind and heart. So we will, at the end of Sefer Qehelet, we're going to have to integrate them all. They start integration, and by being integrated, they end by integration. But the book of Qehelet is an attempt to take each one of the dimensions of Shlomo's life, tear it apart one from the other, analyze it as in a vacuum by itself, and then debate them against each other. Our work, our challenge, what remains for us to be the exercise of the next couple of months, is to start from the beginning of the Sefer. And we're going to do this, we're going to learn the Sefer sequentially. But to start with an identification of who the four personalities are. I'll tell you right now about how we're going to identify them, but the Amal, Chacham, the Nehenet, and the Yirei Elokim. But we'll define those terms and what they mean. And then our exercise in Qehelet is going to be, for the most part, section by section, to read and to analyze who's speaking, whose voice are we hearing, to whom is he speaking? And what issue is he addressing? And because we're the assumption is that we're dealing with personalities of Shlomo Melech, to assist us, we are going to revert back time and time again to the life of Shlomo. Because you cannot divorce the Sefer from the context of the man who wrote it. Let me end with one suggestion already as to where this is going. There are many themes to Sefer Kohelet. There are many issues of this debate. This debate is going to revolve around several tzirim, several anchors, several... how did you help me out? Tzirim, tzir.
Pivotal points,
thank you. Right. Several pivotal issues. And they can be identified by... keywords. We call milat mancha, or a key or leading word. So what you do is, if you analyze the number of times a particular word appears in a text, you get a sense of what that text is addressing. So, for example, the two words that appear in Kohelet more often than any other, actually, it's not Hevel and Havel Hevelim. That's connected, certainly more than many. That is one of the key Milot Manchot. But the word that actually appears more than any other are the paired words Tov and Ra. And just as an exercise, on the source pages that I gave you, the last two pages, I did a simple search. The olden days we used to do it with the Concordancia. Today we do it on computer. But a simple search of every reference to the word Tov and Ra in Kohelet. 52 psukim Kohelet mention the word Tov, and 41 mention the word Ra. That's a fairly good indication that these are pivotal issues. So one of the, which is a right from, without even looking at the text, I know that this debate between these four personalities is somehow going to touch upon or relate to some of the existential questions of Tov and Ra. The other major pivotal theme of Kohelet, which we have seen already a little bit, is going to revolve around Chaim and Mavet, life and death. That's essentially the two key pieces. They're going to debate, each personality is going to have a different take on these values. And they're going to argue with each other, reject each other, accept each other, transmute from one to into another. But the subject matter over which they are debating is the question of Tov and Ra in the world, and the question of life and death, Chaim and Mavet. Do those two pivotal concepts sound familiar? Why do they sound familiar?
We just talked about them a lot in Shul.
We just talked about them a lot in Shul when?
Devarim.
Devarim. The Chaim and the Mavet natati lifnechem et ha... ואין נתת לבכם היום ברכה וכללה, את החיים במוות נתת לפניכם וברכתה בחיים. Where's Tov and Ra? No, where are Tov and Ra and Chaim and Mavet sent pivotal themes? I guess I will. Breishit, Perek.
Adam and Chava
and? Gan Eden. What stands at the center of Gan Eden? Eitz Hada'at Tov Vara and Eitz HaChaim. Chaim V'Mavet. So from the very beginning, whatever these four personalities are, I know one thing. Their debate starts in the beginning. The fundamental principles of Torah that start from Gan Eden. Eitz Hada'at and Eitz HaChaim. From there begins our journey. And who our personalities are, who the voices of Shlomo Melech are, what is the dynamic of this debate over the Eitz HaDaat and the Eitz HaChaim, and how Shlomo HaMelech comes to be debating issues related to Gan Eden, we have our work cut out for ourselves. Hatkan.